Hi, everyone, and welcome to this Talking Somi episode. I'm super, super happy to have Joe with me. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Daniel, and thanks for inviting me to your show.
Anytime. Joe, thanks so much. And, I remember getting some messages, from you on the YouTube channel a couple of months ago. It's always so positive. It's such a pleasure getting those messages. But that said, let me know how I'm curious, and I think it's always nice to know. How did you come across my channel?
I think last year, I started having some problems with my sleep. So as usual, the first place that you go to is the internet. And I started looking around and, reading this and that. And eventually I went to YouTube and I type in insomnia. And I think yours is probably somewhere on the search page, maybe number one, number two. And that's how I came across your channel. And I started, going through some of your videos. And I found them pretty useful, especially when it comes to CBTI and so on.
Well, super, super happy you found it. And I think, I told you, privately that I had, quite a lot of guests from here, from the US, from UK, from Australia, maybe Canada too. But I think you're the first person from a non-English speaking country. And so you're in Malaysia, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm in Malaysia and I'm Malaysian. You can say that.
Yep. Very, very good. So, extra welcome to you. And because I think, it's so important for people all around the world to know that insomnia is not anything like unique to you as an individual. It happens really to everyone, like all over the globe. So it's an extra special guest here. But that said, I think you've been doing well, and you tipped me about a book from Claire Reese that we should talk about. But before that, tell us a little bit about like your journey, what you learned so far, how you're doing, etc. That would be super helpful.
Okay, yeah. So like I said, last year I started having some trouble with sleep. My house is pretty close to a mosque, and just so you know, Malaysia is a predominantly Muslim country, so it's not unusual to have a mosque, which is about, in this case, it's about maybe half a kilometer away from my house, and they have prayers every morning at about five in the morning.
Yeah.
And last year they installed, I think, maybe like a new sound system, so it's pretty loud every morning, and my sleep got disrupted. And that was just like one of the problems I was having. The other problem was my next door neighbor. They finished their work pretty late. I think they work in a restaurant, and they come back and you can still hear noises next door at 1 in the morning, sometimes even later. So, after a while, I started to develop anxiety with sleep, because in my mind, I'm thinking like, if I try to go to sleep, say at 12, midnight, let's say, my sleep will get disrupted because of my neighbors until 1, maybe later. And if I do fall asleep, I'll get woken up at 5 in the morning. So I'm not going to get enough sleep. I'll probably do maybe 3 or 4 hours of sleep every night. So to me, that was pretty anxiety inducing, as you can imagine. That was the gist of my problem. I tried to, resolve the problem. Like eventually after a few months, I had soundproof windows installed, and I tried to talk to my neighbor and so on and so forth, and it did get some of these problems resolved. But I realized by then that even though I've sort of cut down the external noise, I still wasn't sleeping well. The anxiety was still there, and to me, that was a bit puzzling because I thought, hey, problems taken care of, right? But, you know, the anxiety is still there. I would still be like thinking at night, you know, what if I, you know, can't sleep tonight again, you know?
Exactly.
So yeah, that was my problem. And of course I came to your channel, I came across your channel and learned a bit about CBTI. And I applied some of those methods like bed restriction. And what was the other one? I think it was
stimulus control.
Yeah, that's right, stimulus control. And it helped. And soon enough, my sleep improved. But even then, even though I noticed that my sleep was improving, I still have this like a background worry. Like it's at the back of my mind. And I'll like throughout the day, you know, as I'm going through my life, I'll be thinking, you know, what if I don't sleep well tonight again? You know, even though I've been sleeping well for the past, say, 1 week, 2 weeks. And sure enough, you know, if you worry about something, in this case, sleep or insomnia, to be more precise, it's almost certain that insomnia will come back.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's how I slowly, you know, start researching about anxiety, because I remember that you had an interview with what's his name?
Oh, probably Nick Wignall, the psychologist.
Yeah, that's right. And he said that you know, sleep insomnia is not really you know, a sleep problem. It was more an anxiety problem, and that got me thinking. You know, why don't I look up anxiety, you know, disorders? And I started researching and I started reading books on it, and yeah, I mean, some of the books I read from other people, they're useful. But when I came across Claire Weeks, I find that some of her methods, it's pretty interesting. And I started applying them. And slowly, you know, I started to lose my my anxiety around insomnia, around sleep. And sure enough, and now when I look back, I feel that I don't really have anxiety anymore. I'm sleeping well. And if my problems were to come back again, you know, insomnia, I know what to do. You know, I can still apply CBTI and also, you know, apply some of the methods that Claire Weeks talks about in her books.
Exactly. This is super, super, super glad to hear this. And of course, you know, for anyone that's not now listening to this, we're going to talk about more like what specifically, you know, all of that, what you remember learning from her and et cetera. I really want to talk about that. But before, just to kind of like to kind of, you know, fill the picture a little bit more, before this mosque, the new sound system of this mosque was installed. Before that, you pretty much were like sleeping well, no problems with sleep.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, occasionally I would maybe have a bad night, maybe a few times a year, but I wouldn't really see it as insomnia. I was just see it as, oh, I just didn't sleep well, and then the next night I'll sleep well again.
Exactly. I totally agree with that. Like everyone has those nights. So I would totally agree. That was you didn't have any struggle with sleep whatsoever, really. And just for anyone that's tuning in, like for me, it becomes like kind of obvious to, you know, what happened. But for anyone that's kind of listening to this, and please of course comment, Joe, you know. To me, it's one of those classic when you have an obvious disruptor of sleep, like this new sound system, that's real. It did have a tangible impact on your sleep. It disrupted your sleep, as did the other neighbors, right? But that
interesting
is like when you soundproofed everything, when the noise levels are low, you were still having trouble sleeping, which just shows us that, you know, insomnia, when you have this ongoing thing, with trouble sleep, that is not caused by that external thing. It is kind of your relationship with sleep and how you think about it, and that anxiety thing again that's driving it at that point, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a psychological problem now.
Exactly.
Take care of all the external issues, then you know what's left is the psychological aspect of the problem. I mean that is insomnia anyway.
Exactly right. It is an internal thing. It's a psychological thing, exactly like you say. And now one question that came to my mind was, was it kind of obvious to you, like at the time you found my channel, et cetera, was it kind of obvious to you that, yeah, I think this, I understand that this has become sort of an anxiety, or was it still kind of like weird to you? You kind of didn't understand still why you were still having trouble sleeping.
At that time, I think, you know, anyone who's going through chronic insomnia, I think to some extent, they kind of really think straight.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So I think on the one hand, I realized that, hey, this is probably, a psychological problem. But on the other hand, a part of my mind is still seeing this as a, like some kind of a problem outside in the world that you have to solve. So, it's also confusing. I'm like, I thought I solved the problem and why am I not sleeping? Why am I having, because I'm also thinking like, hey, you know, I talk to my neighbors. That's another problem I have. And, you know, we sort of reached like an understanding, you know, but at the back of my mind, I would still think, but what if I start, you know, making noises again?
Right.
There's nothing to stop them from doing that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally understand. And by the way, I think since the time where we were in contact quite a lot over the channel, I think my understanding of insomnia has kind of like evolved. So I think, you know, I was much more kind of traditional CBTI at the time. And I think I understand much more now about how it is truly anxiety and things of that nature. But anyway, let's move forward here and say that, okay, with CBTI, things got a little better. Was it kind of the traditional kind of like you just spent a little bit less time in bed and you were more sleepy? Was it kind of that thing you felt helped, or more the education that helped? Or what do you think helped a little bit with CBTI?
Definitely the application of bed restriction. I usually sleep about eight and a half hours. But with bed restriction, I try to cut it down to about 7 hours. So that's one thing. And then the other one is stimulus control. So I would get into bed and then I would lie in my bed. If I'm not asleep, I would tell myself, hey, if you're not asleep in half an hour, just get up. Of course, I think like everybody else, I hated stimulus control because you have to pull yourself out of bed if you can't sleep. Because at a time, you know, I still had that worry. Hey, if I'm constantly getting up, how am I supposed to sleep? Right? My day is going to be terrible. It's going to be spoiled, so to speak.
100%. And just kind of to comment on that for everyone who's listening here, that's exactly what I see as the real problem with that. That's kind of traditional stimulus control, like just get out of bed and then. And then you feel pressured when you go back. Now I have to sleep, otherwise I have to get up out again. So I totally see the problem with that one. And I think that's where kind of probably what Claire Weeks thinks and like that approach was more helpful to you. And I think will be more helpful to everybody else. So you came across, I think her most famous book, which is the one I have, is the one called Healing for Your Nerves. Was that the one you came across first, or which one did you come across first?
Let me see. I can't. I'm looking through my emails.
Okay.
First one, I think her first book has two different titles, depending on when it's published. And here, when I bought it from Amazon, it's called Self Help for Your Nerves.
Okay.
So it might be the same book.
I think that's the one, exactly.
Yeah.
And how did you, by the way, how did you find that? Did you just randomly, or somebody tipped you off, or?
I think somebody tipped me off. I was doing research on anxiety disorders, panic attacks, and things like that, because I was starting to wonder, hey, you know, what if I have panic attacks as well? I mean, I never had panic attacks, but the anxiety was, you know, it was constant sometimes throughout the day as you think about, I mean, when you get up in the morning, when I got up in the morning, I usually don't have anxiety, but, you know, as the day goes by, you know, it just sort of like builds on.
Closer to that, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I started looking at, you know, research into anxiety. I came across a few books. And then I think it was a comment on YouTube on one of the videos on anxiety that tipped me off. And then I started looking at Clara Weeks, and everyone had, almost everyone had nice things to say about her.
Yeah.
And what she has to say about anxiety. And, you know, that got me into reading, you know, her books. Yeah.
And now, this was some months ago, and just kind of like, yeah, by memory here, if you would say like some key things that you think this really resonated with me and this really helped me from her teaching, yeah. What would you pick from that?
Oh, that's a good question. I think she has a few things that she said that really struck me. Was number one is I think what's really great about her, actually, let me back up a little bit, is the way she chooses her words. I think she said in one of her books that if you say the wrong thing to your patient or to your clients, that can actually lead to, you know, really bad consequences for them and for their conditions. But on the other hand, if you choose the right words, you know, it can really change your patient's perspective on their problems. So the one thing that really comes to my mind right now is when she said, don't get too impressed by your feelings. You know, she didn't say, if you think carefully here, she didn't say, don't get scared of your, you know, anxiety. She didn't say that. She said, don't get too impressed. Mm-hmm. Which means that, yes, anxiety can be a really powerful, overwhelming feeling, and it's easy to get scared. But on the other hand, just know that there are feelings. You know, she's not denying that anxiety can be scary by itself, and you can lose your marbles, as they say. You know, in fact, she said you can get like 99% so terrified of your anxiety, but never get 100%. You know, retain 1% of your sanity, objectivity, so that you can look back and go like, oh, okay, you know, at the end of the day, it's still a feeling, it will pass, and you'll be all right. So that was the first thing that really caught my attention. And that led me to study more of her works.
Very, very good. You know, I'll just share one thing that struck me when I started reading her work was like how very similar it had become to my teaching. And one of the things that really struck me was she said that when someone has had, she called it like kind of like the nerves, but what we call, what we now call like anxiety. If someone has had anxiety for many years, they think that it's easy to think that it will take longer to not have it because it's particularly quote unquote bad. But she said, but in reality, it's not that. Theoretically, you could do well really quickly. It's just that your thoughts are more entrenched, you know, and
it, exactly.
Yeah. Right. Something like that.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah. Like I said, she's a master of, you know, words. And I find that a lot of things that she said, I think other people have said it before. It's just that she chose her words more carefully. Like she has the four steps, like to face the problem, accept them, float. And the last one was let time pass. If you look at the last one, let time pass, basically she's just saying, be patient, right? But if she just said, be patient, then you'd be thinking like, oh, you know, what you're trying to say is I'm not being patient, so now I have to try to be patient. And it becomes effort, right?
Yes.
I'm not patient. I want my problems to be solved with, you know, get it solved right now. But Clara Wieck says, I have to be patient, but I'm not patient. So it becomes like an internal struggle. But instead, she said, let time pass. And when you hear that, you go, oh, that means I don't really have to do anything about it.
Right, right.
So there's no struggle, right? So
exactly.
All these steps, slowly they sort of like help you to chip away at that anxiety and make you relax without actually trying.
Exactly.
I mean, there's still some effort, don't get me wrong. There's still something that you have to do, but it won't become like, you know, oh, I have to do this, I have to do that, you know, I have to keep doing it until my anxiety is gone. It's not like that, you know, otherwise it becomes like what you say, sleep effort.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Actually, that was, you know, you brought up something perfect that we can spend some time on here, which was those kind of four things. So the first one is face your anxiety, which basically my interpretation of that is like same thing as with sleep. Like instead of trying to like, I talk a lot about like how wakefulness becomes like the threat. And if you try to run away from it, like you fight it, you're like, I don't want to be awake, you get more trouble.
Yeah.
If you befriend wakefulness, you go towards it, that is the way. Similar with anxiety, right?
Yeah. My interpretation is maybe a bit different than...
Yeah, tell me.
I when she said face your, face it, it means to face your anxiety, which simply means to just not run away. Anxiety, that feeling comes, a lot of us try to distract ourselves with other things. We try not to think about it. We try to suppress it. But, you know, anxiety doesn't go away just because you try to run away from it. It will chase you around.
Right, exactly.
Try to suppress it even harder, right?
Absolutely. And somebody actually, I mean to do an episode on this very shortly. Another previous guest here named Riley, he said some things he said he did was like play video games or like, you know, just... You do things so he didn't have those feelings. So did you have that thing going on too, where you kind of did things just not to experience anxiety?
Maybe not consciously. Maybe, you know, you try to get on with your life as normally as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Try to do the things that you usually do. And you're hoping that, hey, you know, if you don't pay any attention, it'll just go away. But, you know, it never works.
Exactly.
It's a guarantee.
Very well. So face it. And then was the next thing, was that accept?
Yeah, the next step would be to accept. And I think the best way to explain it is this sentence from one of her books. And she used an analogy where you are a hunter going to the jungle and you're holding on to a rifle. And then as you're going about in the jungle, you meet with a tiger. And she says, when you see the tiger, throw your gun away and let it come at you. Meaning, meaning you let that anxiety feeling just overwhelm you, just do whatever it wants to you. And then you just... you just relax your body, which sort of like goes into the next step, which is flow. But yeah, that's what accept means.
This is, it's funny how similar kind of analogies are. Like I just spoke to someone last week and my analogy became like the tricky thing with insomnia is kind of like, I use the grizzly bear, like the grizzly bear is coming at you. And the scary thing is you just have to stand there and kind of let it come at you. Which is so scary.
It is. But then, she said I think this is related to accept it. She says that sometimes people think that they're accepting a problem, but in reality, they're not. And she said that one way to check whether you're really accepting, you know, that you're really facing your problem is whether you are facing it in a very tense mode. Like some people say, "Oh yeah, I'm accepting my problem. You know, I'm facing it." But in reality, they just saw like tensing themselves as they're doing it, and that's not really accepting the problem. So that's one thing that you have to watch out for. You might say, "Oh, you know, I'm standing there, I'm letting the tiger or the bear, you know, come at me." But if you're tensing your body while you're doing that, while you're imagining it, that's still not accepting it, because if you're truly accepting, you would actually really let go and just, you know, tell that tiger or whatever to come at you.
Exactly. That's a good one. Very practical one for everyone tuning in here. Like that's a very, very good one. And then facing, accepting, and then floating. I love that word. In fact, I have it written down on my thing to talk more about. And what's your take on the floating expression?
I think she has two definitions for floating, like two ways of applying it. Number one is with the body, the physical feeling that you have. So for example, you might feel that anxiety in your body and you sort of can locate where it is in your body. Maybe it's in the throat, in the chest, in the stomach area, and that's fine. You know, you can feel that anxiety going on. That's okay. You accept it, right? Mm-hmm. But the rest of your body, the rest of the other parts that are not affected by anxiety, say your head, your limbs, you know, anywhere else, you can sort of just relax them. You can just relax the rest of the body, so that I would imagine it's something like, you know, your anxiety is surrounded by feelings of relaxation. So you're not trying to do anything to the anxiety. It's there, but you make sure that the rest of your body is relaxed, and that's how you go about with your day. Or as you try to go to sleep at night, you know, the anxiety is there. Okay, fine. Know, but you relax the rest of the, you know, other parts of your body, and sooner or later maybe that would take care of the anxiety as well. So that's one way of looking at flow. The other interpretation of what it means is with the thoughts that we have, because anxiety is also about sort of repetitive thoughts that you keep having. You know, if this is going to happen and that's going to happen, what if I don't sleep? And floating might, in this case, can be applied as you have an anxious thought, and you say, okay, I have this anxious thought. I'm just going to let it float away now, you know, and then the thought comes again and you go, oh, okay, here's another one. And then you let it float away. You don't try to get obsessed with it. You know, obsess about that thought. You just say, okay, bye now. Let it go, let it float away. So that's how you take care of both aspects of the anxiety problem. You know, the thoughts that you have and the feelings that those thoughts produce.
It's very, very helpful. And, you know, I have to go back and study her more. When I heard floating, I thought of something like, you know, some sort of like a wave comes at you, and if you kind of try to stop the wave, that you get flushed away by it. But what you can do is kind of just float on top of it and not be affected by it.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's you know, just now we used the analogy with the tiger and the bear. I think another analogy that you can sort of like use in relation to floating is like a tsunami coming. Mm. When there's a tsunami coming and you're swimming around in the ocean, in the sea, a lot of people try to like fight and go like, oh no, there's a tsunami coming, you know, and then they try to swim away. And of course that's futile. So the thing you should do is just let go and just, you know, let that tsunami come at you. And then you just, if you don't do anything, you'll just float.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, yeah.
Very good. And so over a course of, how long would you say, like, was it over a course of months where you were studying her that you kind of like, you felt it? You felt anxiety not bother you anymore, something like that?
Yeah, I think it took me about maybe a month, maybe two. And I was reading her books daily.
Mm.
Not too many pages, maybe 5 pages a day. You know, you don't want to, it's not one of those books where you are, oh, let's study this. And then, you know, like you're studying for an exam. You just try to take in slowly.
Exactly.
And yeah, and you can also actually go on to, for those of, you know, those of your listeners who don't have her books yet, you can actually go to YouTube and listen to some of her talks. And you can listen for maybe like 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day. Just repeat it over and over again, and it will sink in like osmosis.
Yes. Yeah, she's, for those of you again who haven't listened to her, like I was really curious because I think it was actually another a person who left a comment on my YouTube channel, I think it was Ernest, who said about Claire Weeks, and I Googled her, and it was so cool because it's like, you know, this elderly Australian lady in an interview, and she's just like this old school teacher, like no nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, this is the way it is. And I was like, I loved it. I loved it. That kind of tough love, like no nonsense is great.
She looks a little bit like a high school teacher, right?
Right. And I heard that she said, you know, she was talking to somebody on a show, and that person asked how she was doing, and she said, I still, you know, I had some like a anxiety attack last night or something. She said, and then the host mm-hmm. said, like, oh, I'm sorry for you, and she was like, save your pity for somebody else. It's perfectly normal. Like, you know, it was
so cool,
you know. But, you know, something that, you know, I just want to bring up with you and hear your thoughts on this is like, when I read her books, it's like I have these dual feelings. One feeling is like, I'm so happy because like, I have so similar ideas, and it kind of validates my thinking, and I'm like, this is great material. We got to get this out there. And then the other feeling becomes, oh my gosh, she wrote this like 40-50 years ago, and still, this is not mainstream.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, thanks to the internet, that we actually got to find out about her books,
right?
We can actually talk about it. Yeah.
So do you think? What are your thoughts? I'm just super curious. Like a very general question. Like, like say 15 or 20 years from today. Do you think we will move towards a world where her teaching, her ideas are more mainstream, or are we still going to be overwhelmed with kind of non-helpful ideas and she's still kind of like a minority?
I think that probably, I mean, among the people, I mean, who have anxiety for some time now, they'll probably hear about her eventually, sooner or later. Because if you go into, I've been to a few YouTube channels or a few blog posts that talk about anxiety, and Claire Weeks does come up. But for people who don't have anxiety or who are new to anxiety, like they just have this problem, you know, for a few weeks or whatever, it'll probably take them some time to find out about her. They'll try other ideas that don't work first, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. You run into a few walls here and there. Yeah.
Very, very cool. I think that was a very, very helpful. And any last comments before we finish up here?
Yeah. I just want to say that my last insomnia episode was probably about 2 months ago, And I went to bed maybe around one, sometime around that. I didn't fall asleep until around four-ish. And of course, throughout the night, I still did stimulus control and all that. And I woke up at about maybe 8:30, maybe 9. And so, you know, when I look back, I had maybe like 3 to 4 hours of sleep. But I mean, in the past, that would have, you know, made me feel bad because I would be like, oh, you know, it's coming back, da da da. You know, maybe the next night will get worse. But because I've been, you know, reading Clara Wieck's her books for a few months by then, when I woke up that morning, I didn't feel anything at all. It was just normal, even though I only had like 3 hours of sleep or 4 hours of sleep. And then the next night I slept normal. I didn't even think about insomnia at all. So I can like, so when I look back, I went like, oh, okay, if I'm not anxious, I can get by with just 3 or 4 hours of sleep and I'll be fine. You know, despite what people like Matt Walker, you know, would have said, oh, 3 or 4 hours, you know, you would have gotten cancer or dementia or whatever. Sorry, that's
I know.
Different topic with Matt Walker. Yeah.
So you, again, like, you know, I think there are a couple of things that are really important with this one. And one is when you, you know, when you didn't have that anxiety reaction to it, you didn't think about it during the day, you ended up having a pretty good day, right?
Yeah. It didn't matter at all.
I mean, it's amazing.
At all. I mean, so that made me realize that the problem was not how many hours of sleep you had or you didn't have. I mean, I'm sure that if you didn't sleep at all whole night, you probably feel a bit more tired. That's a given. But what made your day worse and you feel terrible and you feel like the you know, the world is ending is because of your anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Such an important one. Such an important one. So yeah, I'm going to make like a designated episode where I pick up some lines from her book and just recommend her books. But this has really, really been helpful. So yeah, I just want to say thanks for coming on, Joe. And, you know, please stay in touch.
Yeah, thanks to you too, Daniel. And keep up the good work.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.